step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 656. I am joined by my stalwart, beautiful, and effervescent co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, if it's music or if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. We'll be back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
You gotta be smooth, you gotta be slick, you better learn, and you better learn quick. The tricks and the tools of the PUA straight can help even losers like you get laid. Fed up with goodbye, thanks pal, see you later, then you gotta learn.
It is Wednesday, January 5th, 2022, our first show of this year. On the show today, we are talking to Alex Garza of Pegasus Productions and his show, William Shakespeare's Hamlet, by Alex Garza. And of course, Nicole and I will have lively discussions of the world of theater at New York, Chicago, Austin, Tampa, and St. Pete. Stick with us.
No way, geez.
Yes way.
Wait a sec, guys. I don't even know who you are.
By the time I'm done with you, you won't even know who you are.
Okay, we don't need to listen to their conversation. Dialogue, exposition.
Yeah, but it was kind of like singing dialogue.
It had music.
Enjoying it.
So, dialogue. So that was a song called Better Than Beta. And I chose that because of Omicron. You know,
again,
so,
as you know, we were
it's better than
I
beta.
You earlier, Omicron sounds
Omicron.
Like a transformer.
So that was a show called M'lady, a Mennonist musical.
Yeah, I saw all this, and I was perplexed. And what you played was not what I expected from reading this title in.
No, but I had to look up the word Mennonist. Did you do that?
Well, does it have to do with a Mennonite?
No, that's what I thought. It's not has to do with the Mennonite. Mennonist
no, what
is,
does it have to do with? What is it?
Is someone
tell me.
Mennonist is a person who believes that white men are discriminated against.
That's probably why I've never heard of such a thing.
Never heard of such a thing. I believe it's a satire of that.
Okay.
But that was interesting. So I would like to think.
I just have to say, curiouser and curiouser, says Alice to the caterpillar.
I said Iris to anybody.
I'm like, whoa.
So I'd like to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. Who knew that it was National Bird Day?
I find that exciting. I find that, I just find that exciting.
Well, so the interesting thing is I had to look that up just to see if he was accurate. And so it appears that there is not only a National Bird Day, which is indeed today, but there's an international Bird Day,
yeah.
Which is in...
I was like, there's got to be both.
Yeah, which is in the summer, I believe. So, I don't know. You would think
I bet you there's a Texas Bird Day and
why
a
wouldn't
State
they,
Bird Day.
Why wouldn't they just link it up and have it all on the same day?
I don't know. I mean, there's got to be different... What is a bird watcher again?
What?
What is the term for bird watching again?
I don't know. There is one.
Yeah. Oh, it's slipping my mind right
Picklepopolis. I believe it's a Picklepopolis.
No, it'll come to me. It's
I'm
okay.
Sure it will. So that we don't just get immediately bogged down into into
ornithologist. Is that a bird watcher? Is
sure.
it an ornithologist?
Sure.
I hope that's the ornithologist. Otherwise, I'm not too smart today.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to worry about it personally. because that's, you know, that's not what the show's about. I think it could be a
well, you know, you could have some ornithologists listening to Kim Simpson sticking around for offstage and on the air getting mad at me right now.
That's true. So rather than start with all the like negative COVID news, I want to start with a positive review. We had a review of a show that's off Broadway called The Streets of New York. And it's
Streets of New York.
Oh, and you know what? I looked up how to pronounce this person's last name, and I've already forgot. It's Dion Boccaccio, I believe is how it's pronounced, who is a 19th century playwright. You've heard of him, of course, right?
Yes.
Well, he himself was a, as quoted in Laura Collins Hughes' article or review in the New York Times, a prodigal, voracious, and cavalier, colorful figure of the 19th century. He wrote theatrical hits, and he had a lot of drama in his own life, but he did a lot of melodrama. And so this is, by the way, he was born in Dublin.
Dublin.
Of course. And 20 years ago, the artistic director of Irish Repertory Theatre adapted one of those plays called The Poor of New York into this musical called The Streets of New York, which is now having a revival at Irish Rep.
Interesting. I have to just tell you, I love that you just gave me that whole historical background on this. That was kind of exciting.
There you go. Well, it is directed by Charlotte Moore, who is the artistic director there, and it is set by Hugh Landwehr, and they call it a tuneful. Well, let me just read the whole thing. Directed by Moore on an agile, stylized set by Hugh Landwehr, it is a pleasurable escape for a tuneful 2+ hours into a quasi-cartoon version of old New York, where the virtuous struggle and the villainous thrive. You know in your bones, because this is a melodrama, that a comeuppance for the bad guy is inevitable. Just as soon as a slip of the paper, long missing from its rightful owners, reappears.
I like that.
I'm going to keep going.
I'm in the middle of you talking. Keep going.
I'm going to do this next paragraph too. The Streets of New York begins in 1837. That was the year of my birth. On the eve of a financial panic, as the scoundrel banker Gideon Bloodgood, played by David Hess, prepares to abscond from New York with a fortune and let his depositors suffer the consequences. Enter Patrick Fairweather, Daniel J. Maldonado, a sea captain eager to entrust his $100,000 to Bloodgood. The receipt for that transaction, stolen by Bloodgood's wily clerk, Brendan Badgett, played by Justin Keys, is the slip of paper in question. Doesn't that sound like fun?
It does. I wanted to hear. I feel like I was listening to old school, like "Little Glory." Today was that, you know, like.
Yeah, as I was reading it, I thought I should have put an underscore underneath it.
Yeah, that would have been phenomenal.
Yep. One of the songs is called "Oh, How I Love Being Rich."
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm. But I was about to say, who argues with that?
Oddly enough, I looked through here. I cannot find out who wrote the music, though, which I think is interesting. It's not mentioned in this review. Or I blasted right past it. But they do say how the orchestra is cello, woodwinds, harp, bass, and violin. I don't know.
That's some good instruments. I like that.
She ends her excuse me. She ends her review saying, "Grab your vaccine card, put on a good mask, and go."
Put on a good mask and go. I like that.
Put on a good mask was the name of my third book.
Oh,
true. Well, I also needed to say that. So, did you see this Joe Iconis show called Punk Rock Girl?
I did see some stuff on it. I didn't get into it as much as I wanted to because I got pulled away in my
life, but
I did see some stuff.
It's scheduled to open January 20th at Long Island's Argyle Theater. And this is very interesting. Well, let me just read this. Punk Rock Girl is a new musical scored by popular songs and written, scored by popular songs written and made famous by female artists. And those are artists like Blondie, Avril Lavigne, Joan Jett, Pink, Pat Benatar, Gwen Stefani, and more. So it's kind of a jukeboxy thing. It has book and arrangements by Joe Iconis, who, of course, did Be More Chill. Arrangements and orchestrations by Rod Roderick, who did The Lightning Thief. And it is directed by Jennifer Werner. She's also choreographing.
Oh, interesting.
So this is, I got this from theatermania.com, and it says, Punk Rock Girl is described as follows. 16-year-old Angela Quivers is a perfectionist who never takes chances and feels like there's no place where she belongs until she meets Proxy, a teenager who pulls her into a world of grungy guitars, shocking secrets, and big, loud, messy emotions. A musical about a young person finding a community and creating her tribe, Punk Rock Girl is a noisy celebration of all things raw and ragged, trashy and heartfelt, familiar and alien. Sounds like fun.
Dun, dun, dun.
But what was very interesting, at the bottom of this article, they talked about who is the musical director, and it is one Jennifer Peacock, who played the keyboards in Ground Floor Theater's Unexpected Joy.
I was just about to say, she was recently here in Austin, and I just love her name.
Yeah. And she's a lovely person, and I was surprised to see that. I knew that she was working on something in New York, so when I saw that, I emailed her, and I said, I saw your name. Congratulations. It sounds like a lot of fun. And she emailed back right away saying how much she enjoyed working with me.
Dun, dun, dun. I mean, dun, dun, dun. Are you really surprised?
Well, actually,
she
was great to watch. If you went to see Unexpected Joy, she was sitting, you know, down front and leading the band, and she looked like she was enjoying herself and the work she was doing.
Interesting.
Interesting. All right, so let's talk about the not so great stuff. All this COVID-19 cancellations. It's just continuing on as it gets bigger and bigger. And I should say that since we spoke last week, or I should say last year, all the way back in 2021. The city of Austin was in stage four. And indeed, we still are in stage four officially. But if you look at the chart, we're like almost at the top of stage five again. So it's another big old spike. And I should say this while we're talking about this spike, another just a real quick more Ground Floor Theater news. We were scheduled to go into rehearsal on Monday for Anna in the Tropics, and we have made the very difficult decision to postpone that show because of COVID-19 and all the stuff going on. So it'll now happen in August. So, should say that. But Mrs. Doubtfire, did you see what they're doing?
They're just closing for a bit, just because everybody's out sick. The people, they're just, but then they're coming back, right?
They're closing for 9 weeks. I mean, that's
9 weeks. Yeah, it was some weird thing, and I was like, listen, whoever is their Daddy Warbucks that can let them do that. Power to them.
Well, no, it's because they don't have a Daddy Warbucks that they have to do that. So they, what they're doing is they're saving 9 weeks of salaries, basically.
You still have all that rental and other overhead. I don't know.
Still,
I mean, power to them.
But
I don't know.
So the amount of losses, and I don't know if it's this article or another one, but one of the articles that I've read here that we'll talk about talks about how much it costs to cancel one performance. Because when you cancel these performances, you're still paying everybody. And so he says, and this is from an article by Michael Paulson in the New York Times, Quote, McCollum said that if he does not attempt this hiatus, the show would run out of money and be forced to close within 3 weeks. And there's plenty of reason to believe that this is not hyperbole. Five Broadway shows in December decided to close earlier than anticipated, including the musicals Ain't Too Proud, Diana, Jagged Little Pill, and Waitress, as well as the play Thoughts of a Colored Man. I should also say that Andrew Lloyd Webber canceled or postponed his or shuttered Cinderella until February. It's really crazy out there.
Yeah, I knew it is, Lisa.
Yeah.
It is.
So Mrs. Doubtfire, so they're set up to open again. They had, we should say, a little rocky start. They had mediocre reviews, and the New York Times just flat out panned them. But according to them, they were starting to build an audience, as one could, and they just totally lost the momentum. Oh, there was another quote here that seemed to be, yeah, in terms of trying to make this show work the way it is, it said, "You're asking me to plant a sapling in a hurricane." So the idea is planting something that's going to grow, but doing it in a hurricane that's just forcing it, you know, doing everything it can to stop its growth. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. So
analogy. Yeah, that was an interesting analogy.
That was the word I was trying to come up with. Thank you. So it already had.
Sorry, we're not on video today because I wish you could see my faces at all of our conversation. I'm cracking myself up.
Well, you should send pictures
a lot. I don't know. It's kind of funny. Yes.
So yeah, prior to this shutdown, they've already had to cancel 11 performances. I don't know. I think it's an interesting strategy. We'll see. We'll see if it works.
Yeah, like you're like, we'll see if it works.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, you're going to have to find a new formula. I just feel like this is, I hate saying this is what it is, but I don't know.
Yep. And then, of course, last week.
I would like off this hamster wheel. I would just like to go on the record saying that.
I hear you. I feel the same way. Waitress ended its Broadway run. So there's that. We're going to talk about Waitress a little while later once we get into Today in Theater History. That's just a spoiler. Not a spoiler. That's a... There's a word for it. I can't think of it. But it was one of those. Waitress is closed. And they were one of the ones, I believe, that was closed because of COVID. And then just before they reopened or before they did another performance, they just canceled their...
They did. I will tell you this. They did film it. That was part of why Sarah Bareilles came back into it, so they could film it. So they did get that done. So I think that I don't know what they're doing. They're turning it into one of those Netflix-y kind of, I don't want to call it Diana the Musical, but I think they did a Diana the Musical and taped it and just did it. They're putting it on after the fact.
Well, that's good.
I hear the Hamilton. How about that? Hamilton did it too.
Well, yes. Hamilton actually filmed it prior to the COVID-19. So I'm saying
they filmed it to put it on a streaming platform. That's all I meant. Yeah. Diana put it out on the streaming platform before the stage. That's why I was saying it didn't work.
Yes, it did.
For my analogy.
Yeah, I would look forward to seeing it because I have not seen Waitress yet. I haven't seen it in New York and wasn't unable to see it when it was here.
Oh, I thought you did see it while
I
was here.
No, I didn't. I couldn't go. I was very sad because I wanted to see it. More bad news. The Under the Radar Theater Festival canceled. That's the Under the Radar. That's the fringe festival done at the Public Theater. And that's very sad. And there was a show there that, what did I want to see? There was one. One show is called Otto Frank. Written by Roger Guinevere Smith. And I wanted to see that or wanted to learn more about it because you know who Otto Frank was.
Why do I know who Otto Frank was?
He was the father of Anne Frank.
Okay, thank you. I'm like, why do I know that name? Otto Frank. Thank you. Thank you for jogging that memory.
You know, and Shep's Lore has Anne Frank as my cousin, so that would make him my uncle. But Shep's Lore is wrong. But interesting, Oscar Eustace did say that all the festival artists are going to be paid anyway, which is a very good thing. We like the public.
Okay. We like the public, yes.
So as part of this pandemic, one of the, and we talked about this last week, one of the byproducts of this whole pandemic thing is the focus on swings and understudies, and that the world is learning who these people are, what they do, and their importance to theatrical productions. And there is they are making a documentary called At This Performance, which is all about understudies and swings.
Yes, and I believe they started filming last year before the...
They did, in 2020.
Crazy started, you know, like it came up. I mean, I guess that all happened last year, too, but
it
you know where it's, I was
it
going
It started filming
that.
Toward the end of 2021, which is when all this was going on. But I find it, I'm thrilled. I cannot wait to see it. And they mentioned that, you know, this is in... a lot in response to what Charlotte St. Martin said with regards to them being underexperienced. But I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to just read these names of the people that they are focusing on because somebody may know them. They're featuring Jessica Vosk from Finding Neverland and Wicked, Kayla Davion, Waitress, King Kong, your favorite, and Tina. Dana Steingold, who did the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, Avenue Q, and Beetlejuice, Afra Hines, In the Heights, Ghost, Hamilton, and Summer. Also Hadestown, Matt Rozelle, Les Miserables, Anastasia, Yasmin Allers, Rent, On Your Feet, and Rocky Horror Show, and Kevin Rapponi, who did Rock of Ages. And then, of course, there's going to be more, and it's directed by Pete Ferriero. Ferriero? That's a name.
I was like, that's it. But it kind of has, it's sing-songy.
That's a name. Ferriero. Ferriero. Speaking of singing, do you remember the TV series a few years ago called Gallivant?
Yes, I was so in love with that show. So were you. We were enjoying that.
No,
thoroughly.
I did
what
not.
Happened?
I did not like the show. I did not like it at all. And I stopped watching it almost immediately. Well, flash forward 2 or 3 years later, I'm now watching it again. I still don't like it. I don't think it's very good. I think, but it's enjoyable. I'm enjoying watching
it. It's like, it's enjoyable. I didn't think it was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, no, it's far from great.
Boy, I really have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did not enjoy it the first time around. I'm enjoying it the second time around.
The Man in His Boat. That song makes me laugh really hard.
Okay, I don't know that song, but I'm sure it's good. But anyway, so it's available to watch on Hulu. If those of you who Hulu have the Hulu, you can watch it there.
The Hulu.
Yep. And then, oh shoot, let's go back in time to where we're talking about negative things just to add one more little bad little seed, Theater 80, which is, off Broadway. It was an old speakeasy, and in the 60s, it turned into a theater. It had shows like You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. They may be closing their doors.
Oh,
I know.
That's sad. I don't know if it was American Theater or maybe it was Washington Post, New York Times. There's an article, and I'll have to send it to you so maybe we can discuss it next week, that talks about how Fringe itself and all this Fringe work is really been decimated within the theater community, being decimated, and like they don't know how much Fringe can survive anymore. And I'm like,
sure.
This is a bummer.
Well, that's, you know, any kind of theater that is not, quote, mainstream is having a hard time right now because, you know, it's hard enough getting audiences.
In an already pummeled industry. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but I'll have to find this article. I found it really fascinating what some people had to say, and we can discuss that next week. That would be smashing.
Yeah, I would think that would be smashing too. So the one little bit of brightness in this paltry haze of negitude is Antonio Banderas's Chorus Line is going to reopen.
Yes, he was like, he gave a hint on the social media. It will be returning to Spain, I believe.
Yes, the Barcelona's Teatre
Tivoli.
Beginning on April 23rd. And it's going to star Manuel Bandera as Zach. And it is co-directed and produced not only by Antonio Banderas, but it... Oh, who's the other co-director? I don't know. It doesn't say. But he's co-directing it with
somebody.
It was
all his thing. I just, you know, power to him. I have to tell you, he really knocked my socks off playing Guido. He played Guido completely Spanish and not Italian, and I was totally okay with that. He was so good, I was okay with that.
By the way, it did say who he was co-directing it with. I totally forgot. One by Ark Lee.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Hello. Yeah. The original Connie.
So it premiered in 2019 in Malaga.
I'm in Malaga. I believe that's correct, but what do I know?
It's true. So that's a good
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was actually like, oh, this is a nice little buzzmaker. Happy news.
He's a singular sensation.
Every little step he takes. Little step he takes.
So there was a bit of unfortunate news peppered around with some less fortunate news. So, but and with some good stuff too. The Irish show, Irish rep. If I was in New York, I would go see that Streets of New York.
Oh, Streets of New York! I definitely would too.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun.
It does.
So we're going to go away in this section with your favorite show, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. But I never could remember. I kept talking about, so there was a point in time when there were two national tours out that were independent of each other. One starred Donny Osmond.
And the other was Michael Damon from Young and the Restless.
The other one was Michael Damian. And that Michael
Danny Romolotti.
Now, Michael Damian is the one I saw. My very dear friend Sarah Miles was in it. And he was just terrible.
And here's what's interesting. They wrote his character while he was doing it while he was still on Young and the Restless.
Oh.
And they wrote his character, Danny Romolotti, going off to star in Joseph. And they let him perform on Broadway. But they let him perform, and they had some of the cast that was in the Broadway show on Young and the Restless, and it was kind of a brilliant crossover promotion marketing.
Oh, yeah, that is brilliant. So there was a big lesson to learn. So they played the Pantages in Los Angeles, and I was there. I had house seats. And let me give you a little piece of advice. If you have a very dear friend in a show, and you watch it and you didn't like it, and at the end
don't
of the
get
show...
Close.
And at the end of the show, if everybody else stands up, don't stay seated. That would be a bad thing.
Oh, yeah, no.
Which is what I did. And Sarah got very angry at me for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's go to break and listen to Michael Damian singing Close Every Door to Me, because doors are closing. Here it is.
Okay.
Close every door to me, hide all the world from me, bar all the windows and shut out the light.
This is Morgan River Reporter, New York Bureau, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air, KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
That's Morgan, roving reporter. I've not heard from her in quite a while. It was nice to hear her voice again. Morgan is the niece of one Nicole Chiro, and she recorded that in New York, and she is no longer that youthful sound that you hear now. She is all grown up. So we're going to get right to our first guest, which is Alex Garza, and we had a really good time talking to him, Nicole and I, so we're going to jump into that. His show is tonight. So listen up and act accordingly. Here's that interview. Well, it's a new year hit here at Offstage and On the Air, and I am so thrilled that my very first guest of this new year is Mr. Alejandro Garza, Alex Garza of Pegasus Productions, talking about his show that he's going to be doing at Ground Floor Theater. Hello, Alex.
Hi, Lisa. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Good
of course.
Talk to you. Yeah.
Well, you know, we can see each other, but nobody else can.
Correct.
So you're doing a live and live streamed performance of your version of Hamlet by some unknown playwright.
Yes, I decided to do an interpretation of Hamlet by a certain playwright who lived 400, 500 years ago, and I wanted to kind of do my own version of the story, but still pay tribute to the characters and the original classical script. And, you know, again, recreate William Shakespeare's...
That's who it is. William Shakespeare.
Yes,
I couldn't remember.
It just popped into my brain.
Thank you.
His creation in a different way. So I've decided to kind of do my own interpretation and restructuring of the story, and hopefully in an original way and entertaining way.
So as many of your shows go, this is a one-person interpretation, so you're playing all the characters. How many of Shakespeare's characters from this show are you actually playing?
Okay, I would say it was one, two, three, about six or seven of the characters. And, you know, as any Shakespeare play contains, you know, many characters, I wanted to keep it very specific to the characters that I thought were most important to the story and most important to the themes and the point of view of the main character of Hamlet and how
okay.
they affect his life and his
so let me take some guests. Hamlet would be one. Ophelia
yes.
would be another.
Oh yes, definitely.
Laertes.
Yes.
How about what's his name? Tybalt and Mercutio.
Well, actually, I decided to leave them out. Those characters are from Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, that's true.
Oh. I don't know. Maybe they make like surprise appearances in Hamlet, but not to my memory. But I decided to leave them out anyway. So
no, it's true. That's I totally got that wrong.
I get them all mixed up.
But
as well,
so. But what about Rosencrantz and Guildenstern?
You know, I really kind of struggle with that, and they play such an important part in the story, and. I guess in terms of the movement of the story and certain plot elements, but I wanted to kind of touch on the more dramatic, poignant characters that are part of Hamlet's story and his conflict and, you know, his journey. So I decided to not include them in this interpretation.
Polonius, he's going to be there?
Yes.
And of course, that famous non-speaking role of Yorick.
Yes. Yes, just a kind of slight guest appearance, but yes, definitely included. So,
who everybody gets the quote wrong in the world?
Yes, yes, I think it's I myself kind of found that out just recently in the recent years, you know, and I think I probably got the famous quote wrong myself from time to time. So.
Well, you heard all that dinging, and that just tells us that Nicole Chiro has joined us here on the podcast. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late.
It's okay. We're just going to continue on talking. Alex, did you do any changes to plot, or is anything different from Shakespeare's basic rundown of the show?
I don't think I made any changes to plot necessarily, other than not necessarily including all the scenes from the play and kind of restructuring them in a different way. And actually, in addition to some of Shakespeare's text, I kind of included my own kind of contemporary modern dialogue for the show and kind of almost reinterpretations of some of the the dialogue and soliloquies in the play, just to kind of give it a more modern feel, but also kind of add my own interpretation to it and what is going on in Hamlet's mind. So.
Cool. And are you doing the famous to be or not to be speech?
Yes. And that's one that I definitely couldn't exclude. And I found like a cutting of the play online. And then I saw that I kind of searched and it was like, this cutting doesn't have the to be or to not to be soliloquy in it. And then I had to do like a word search and I found it, but I think they had moved it somewhere else. And there's been so many different versions and kind of scrambling about the interpretations of the play that I've seen where people have kind of like restructured and put the to be or not to speech, the to be or not to be speech at the beginning, in the middle, maybe towards the end of the play. And I want it to be true to Shakespeare's intention and his characters and his conflicts. But again, I wanted to kind of tell them in my own way, mostly through the point of view of Hamlet.
Would you like to hear my version of the to be or not to be speech?
Certainly.
Okay, so in light of COVID-19 and a lot of the different infections and sicknesses going along, here's my version. TB or not TB, that is the congestion of cough.
Well done.
I'm dying.
I think you stay true to the iambic pentameter as well.
I like the crickets. So of course this show is not necessarily a comedy, but do you have some funny? Are there gonna be some laughs in this version for folks to?
I think it. I guess it all depends on someone's. I think everybody has a different point of view and everybody reacts to things in a different way. I think that some of the humor is very subtle, and I've seen performances of Hamlet where there has been a lot of kind of comedy, injected into the play. And it's there in the script. I think it's just how the actor interprets it. I don't think I'm intentionally putting anything like comic for audience, the sake of making the audience laugh. But I think there may be little moments here and there of sarcasm, subtlety that maybe bring a chuckle. But again, mostly I'm touching on kind of the serious tragedy and the thoughts and the inner monologues that go on in Hamlet's mind through this process of what's going on in the story,
Now, if we were to watch the unedited version of Hamlet on stage, we'd be sitting in the theater for around 4 hours. How long is your show?
It's going to be under an hour, being a solo show. I've done solo shows that have been an hour and a half, maybe close to 2 hours. It's very exhausting, but I want it to be very specific about Hamlet's story, his journey, and kind of touch on what I feel are the most important elements of the story to me and interpret them the best way in the shortest amount of time. I think just to keep the audience's attention as one actor, I try to uphold the audience's, attention and attention span, but I think keeping it at least under an hour is probably the best way to go.
I think you're probably right. Now this show is going to be done at Ground Floor Theater.
Correct.
Tonight, actually, as it turns out. Are there tickets available?
Yes, there are tickets available, and they can be purchased as tickets for in-person attendance, as well as like watching the live stream. So
great. And you can get information at groundfloortheater.org. As you said, it's going to be live streamed, and I think there's just a limited number of in-person tickets because of COVID-19. We are now in stage 4. So Ground Floor Theater's policy is 50% capacity at this point.
Yes, definitely. We want to make sure, safety for everybody, but still offer as much theater experience as we can at the same time.
Awesome. So before we go, tell folks why they want to come see it. What would make me excited to come and see this show?
Well, I give it a different, hopefully unique point of view. I think it's a story, having first read the play in high school, I think it's a story that many people are familiar with, and if they haven't read the play through school secondary or through college or on their own, I think it's found its way into popular culture enough where people know a lot of the references from the play Hamlet, particularly to be or not to be speech, et cetera, and a lot of other kind of quotes and stuff from the play. But hopefully I'll be able to offer an entertaining, again, unique perspective of the story and the characters that the audience will enjoy.
Well, I just have one parting word of wisdom for you, and I would tell you to thine own self be true.
Yes, and I try to live by that motto myself. So,
Polonius to Laertes, Act 2, Scene 3.
Yes, one of my favorite quotes, in fact, yeah.
I don't actually know that that's the actor scene. I just made that up. Well, Alex Garza, thank you so much for coming on Offstage and On the Air. I look forward to seeing the show tonight at the theater. For folks that want to get more information, groundfloortheater.org. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa and Nicole, and look forward to it.
The question is to be or not to be.
We are back. You are listening to Off Stage and On the Air with Lisa and
Nicole,
the one and the only. Well, that was just a lovely interview with Alex Garza. I am looking forward to seeing his show tonight.
It was, and I loved your music choice at the end.
To be or not to be. The question is to be or not to be. That is from, you're going to be very surprised, Hamlet the Musical.
I heard him singing the Hamlet the Musical.
So I've never seen Hamlet the Musical, but I'm sure it's excellent.
Excellente.
So in our last 15 minutes, we don't have that much more to talk about, so we may just play a random show tune. But I did want to let folks know, if they were interested in seeing Valencia Tolbert's Blurred Ballerina at the Vortex, it has been postponed to a date later to be announced, I suppose.
Interesting.
So now I saw, so we had them on the show when they did the workshop, I guess it was about a year ago. I was looking forward to seeing the produced version, if you will. In the Vortex, who's been very prolific, I lost the word, during COVID, when they postpone something, it's mean, you know, they were one of the first back in.
Yeah, they were back in it. But they, you know, everybody's really been, I just want to say for a moment here, people want to learn about how amazing Austin theaters are, ATX Theater. Hats off to everybody, really came together in creative ways and created some great content over the last year. I was thinking about that the other day.
I agree. There's lots of stuff. Actually, we had a long talk in our staff meeting today about, you know, streaming and things like that. And I do think that the people were more apt to sit and watch a streamed piece at the beginning of the pandemic. I don't know that.
There's fatigue on it. But mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't just overall looking how everybody just kept creating, kept doing, thinking of new ways. It just really got me inspired the other day when I was thinking about it. And I happened to be on the ATX Theater site, and I kept seeing all the different companies, and I was like, oh yeah, oh yeah.
Yep.
Just really amazing.
There's a lot of stuff there. But one of the things that is happening right now, because is not necessarily affected by COVID, is the Shrewd Productions. They're doing Shrewd Mountain Lodge, a holiday whodunit, is all done by mail. And this is their second time to do this.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting. I participated on the last show. I forgot the name of it. Did not do it this time. But I'll read the blurb that you can find at what Nicole just mentioned, which is atxtheater.org. And it says, the cast and crew of the Winter Festival play assemble at Shrewd Mountain Lodge for the event of the season. At least in this small town. But things start to go awry as newcomers, outsiders, and big ideas change up the holiday staple as strange events and sinister accidents continue to pile up. It seems clear that someone or something is trying to sabotage the productions. Is it the ghost that haunts the stage or a disgruntled artist? Are the cast and crew in danger? Will the show go on? The point is, there is a mystery. So if you subscribe to this, you will hear from all the six of the main characters, also through physical cards, but also video messages and letters. And then you get souvenirs. It's actually a quite a fun thing.
See what
to...
I'm talking about? The clever things outside of the box.
Yeah.
The vortex in the drive-thru and the Playhouse doing all the live versus film. Like, it's just outside everybody. I'm just, that's exciting.
It's outside the box.
Outside
so
the box.
Yeah, so that
I'd like to come up with a new term for outside the box.
I would love for you to do that too.
I am on it. I'm working on it. I'll let you know when it gets there.
All right, we've arrived. It is time for Today in Theater History.
Today there was some stuff that happened, and Lisa gonna tell us what it was.
La la. So we'll start.
Tell us, Lisa.
We'll start in 1894.
Ooh, 1894. That was a year, Lisa.
Yep. Well, do you remember what opened on January 5th in 1894 at the Berkeley Lyceum Theater starring Ida Jeffrey's good friend?
No. Sadly, I broke the heel off my shoe and was stuck. That was a bad night.
Henrik Ibsen's Ghosts opened then.
Oh, really?
And whenever I think of Ghosts, I think of 1977, specifically July 14th, 1977.
Why?
Well, that, as you probably remember, is when the Great Blackout, or the Big Blackout in the 70s, happened in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I had just moved to New York, and I was in my apartment when the lights went out on 14th Street. But my roommate, Mark Baltazar, was walking down 4th Avenue he was the scenic designer of a production of Ghosts. Walking his way to the theater. I forgot the name of the downtown theater he was working at.
I thought maybe the ghosts got you while you were in the blackout.
They did. So 1921, it is the birthday of Frederick Durmat, who is a Swiss playwright.
Frederick Durmat?
He wrote a show that was on Broadway in 1958 starring Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontaine called The Visit.
And Get it was, out.
And it was later adapted by your friends John Kander and Fred Ebb into a musical, yes. As you know.
One of the last musicals that they had written together that
Absolutely.
Hadn't been produced. It wasn't produced and both of them were alive. Isn't that kind of sad? But what's starring one Cheetah Rivera?
Yep. You can't lose with Cheetah, although they did with that show, I think. I don't think it did very well.
Yeah, I mean, Cheetah was still Cheetah. I mean,
that's true.
You know.
That's true. So I don't know anything about this show, but I had to talk about it because it's called Is That So?
Is That? Z-A-T?
Yeah. I-S-Z-A-T-S-O. Is That So?
Oh, is That So?
Is That So? Question mark. 1925, James Gleason and Richard Tabor wrote this and they starred in it. It's about a down and out boxer and manager.
Is That So?
It is
they
so.
They wrote and starred in it?
It is so. It's about a down-and-out boxer and a manager who disguise themselves as servants to help a wealthy young man expose his corrupt brother-in-law. Very Shakespearean.
That's random.
Well, yeah. But very Shakespearean, yeah. Wouldn't you say?
I mean, it is. It is very. But, like, I love the boxer. Okay.
Yeah. It ran for 618 performances.
Oh, is that so?
Is that so? It's true. And then there was a show that opened it was based on a little movie called The Wizard of Oz, or a book called Wizard of Oz, and it's The Wiz. Opened. It was adapted by Charles Smalls. It
that
ran,
opened today, huh?
Pardon me?
That opened today. Wow.
Yep, in 1975. And, of course, there is the movie starring Michael Jackson and Diana Ross, amongst others. Like, every major black star was in that movie, I think. Nipsey
yeah.
Russell played, I think, one of the... one. I think he played the Tin Man. Anyway, it mm-hmm. ran for 1,672 performances. And it won the Tony Award for Best Musical. I guess it's mostly known for the song Ease On Down the Road.
Believe?
What?
What about Believe? I don't know. There's a few songs in there I hear all the time.
Okay. It starred Stephanie Mills.
Stephanie Mills, right?
And it had Tiger Haynes, Hinton Battle, Ted Ross, Andre DeShields, who's a pretty big deal these days, and Dee Dee Bridgewater.
Oh, yeah. And they did do the live TV version.
They did.
Queen,
they did.
Latifah.
They did. I did not see it.
There were some good moments in it. There was some stuff in it I really appreciated a lot. It's hard to do a full straight, you know, we've talked about this.
Yep.
In
1980, Harold Pinter, Betrayal, premiered at the Trafalgar Theater with Blythe Danner, Raul Julia, and Roy Scheider. And directed by Peter Hall. I remember
Julia, we just brought up Nine earlier. I miss him.
Has he passed away? Raul Julia?
Raul Julia? He passed away years ago. Oh, Lisa, there's a wonderful documentary on PBS. I believe you can stream it. Get it off the app. And it's called I Am Raul. And it's spectacular. It shows old footage of him doing Shakespeare in the Park with Meryl Streep. And OMG, it's just spectacular.
I believe I saw him in the parks at one point.
Oh, that's even more spectacular.
But I remember when Betrayal opened, they advertised it a lot. I saw it a lot on TV. And now let's skip forward to 1984. Jeremy Irons.
That's an ominous year.
It is. Well, I remember when I read 1984 seemed a really long way away. So Jeremy Irons and Glenn Close starred in The Real Thing by Tom Stoppard at the Plymouth Theater.
Oh, I remember this running.
And some of
I
the
didn't see it.
It also had Christine Baranski was a replacement and Kenneth Walsh.
That's another good cast.
Mm-hmm. It won the Best Play Tony for that year. And the director was Mike Nichols.
Oh, Mike Nichols.
Yeah. In 2003 is the death anniversary of Gene Kerr, who wrote Mary Mary. And Mary Mary is a play that I think of a lot because it was in my parents' library. And therefore, my library, I still have a copy of Mary Mary from back in the day. It was one of the longest non-musical shows that ran. It ran for 1,572 performances.
Oh.
She also might remember her.
That is a good amount.
She wrote the TV series Please Don't Eat the Daisies.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Her husband was Walter Kerr, the New York Times theater critic.
Mm.
Yep. And then jumping forward to 2016, we talked about this when it happened. It's the death anniversary of Liz Suedos, the choreographer.
Mm-hmm. That makes me sad.
She had Tony nominations for Best Book, Best Score, Best Choreography, and Best Directions. Isn't that amazing?
Interesting.
For the musical Runaways.
Yeah.
And then I did, I spoiled it earlier, said we're going to talk about this later in Today in Theater History, but as I mentioned, Waitress shows up in Today in Theater History. It closed.
Barbara Streisand on their final tour.
It closed at this date. So it's only closed once. Twice.
No, I think it's closed. Well, no, three times. Didn't it close for a bit and then close for a bit?
No, well, they canceled. And then close? They canceled performances. They did not close. But yeah, so it closed. And again, we talked about it closing pre-pandemic and then wondering why it got the SVOG money and then they ended up returning the money, et cetera, which was the right thing to do. If you remember correctly.
All right.
Yep. Well, that is Today in Theater. It's just jam-packed full. And we've just about done it. We've just about killed another hour of time at the lovely offstage and on the air. And hold on, that's it. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have a lead in. I didn't know if I was supposed to jump in or not.
You're always allowed to jump in. It's your show.
I feel like I jump on you sometimes. I was trying not to to talk over you.
You know, the only way to get heard around me is to talk over me, because I talk a lot.
No, we both do, Lisa.
So
that's why we do a radio show.
Well, anyway, I wanted to welcome you to 2022 and to remind folks you can find us on all the platforms. And you can still sign up for the podcast at offstageonair.com. We'll just send it to you in the emails.
Yeah, and then we just arrive in your mailbox every week. You don't have to go looking. We come a knocking.
There you go.
Well, Nicole, it was magical to me.
I beg your pardon?
Sounds spectacular and magical to me.
Me too. Well, it was great to have you on the show today. Again, we'll see you next week. And everybody else, we're going to see you next week. But before that, we're going to go out with a song from The Wiz. And it's called I Was Born on the Day Before Yesterday, which was a song I was not familiar with.
Good choice, Lisa.
So ta-ta. And for everybody else, we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye.
Bye.
I was born on the day before yesterday. I had